Ricky Buckhill. With ease, Miguel Aziz's first goal for Portsmouth.
Into the path of Smith-Rowe, into the box, Smith-Rowe scores! A really deserved first goal in Huddersfield Town colours.
An absolutely amazing finish to that Luton Town match. Declan Rice again at the death brings home the 3 points for Arsenal. That match was truly, truly insane. As people say, proper Barclays. Saka with honestly one of his best performances of the season, if not his best performance of the season. And a lot of that had to do with Odegaard dropping a little deeper, not occupying his spaces. I thought Ben White made excellent selections on when to overlap and when to give Saka his space. Saka actually is fantastic, as he's mentioned, at working out of those double and triple teams. He has done the footage taping. He has looked back. He has seen what works and what doesn't. However, when he doesn't have that space to operate in and he feels that he only has one route out or he needs to play that pass back, he's not as successful. And however we reshaped it, it had a lot to do with the game state, but hopefully something we'll do moving forward. Saka was just incredible. Incredible. It was honestly just an absolute joy to watch. And I mean, when that final header of Declan Rice's found the net, I was apoplectic. I was beyond belief. It was truly something incredible, but again, not why you're here. We're going to start with our player profile, and that is Lino Sousa. Lino Sousa is one of the biggest prospects at Hale End who honestly doesn't even get the talk that Mario Cozier Dewberry does. Obviously, he's not mentioned in the same breath as Muneri and Lewis Skelly because he's a left back. And, you know, that's not as necessarily sexy to people who are waiting to see who's going to come next. He doesn't even get talked about as much as Ruud Walters. But genuinely, I believe Lino Sousa is what people think Ruud Walters can be. When they call for Ruud Walters to play a right back, now that we have a little bit of an injury crisis, that's what people are asking for. They think he's this inverted right back. He's a Swiss Army knife who can do all sorts of things, and he is. But Lino Sousa is all that and much more. He was born in Lisbon, Portugal. He remembers being 5 years old playing futsal, which for him came before football, something that is very common for kids in Portugal, according to Sousa. He had an older cousin who played futsal for Benfica, and this is kind of how he grew up and why he has such great technique. His family actually moved to Wolverhampton when he was 8 years old, and he joined a Sunday league club called Ashfire FC. Played for them for about 8 months, but funny enough, he missed the form filing date because they were away on holiday and wasn't able to play for the team when he was 9 years old. However, he did earn himself a trial at West Brom. And the first time he went on trial there, it actually ended up being a disaster. He didn't know that they were going to be playing on AstroTurf. He brought metal studs, and one of the kids snitched on Lino to the coaches, and Lino had to sit out because he couldn't train with metal studs on. However, he did find his way to the West Brom Academy and immediately became a star. He started playing with the under-12s pretty quickly as a 9-year-old, and at 16, he was playing for West Brom's under-23s. Yes, it was due to an injury issue, but his first start with the under-23s as a 16-year-old opened everybody's eyes at West Brom and across England at just how good Lino Sousa is. However, he was still in school at the time and therefore could only train with the under-23s once a week. It was in January of 2022, just a few months later, just before Sousa turned 17, he got his move to Arsenal. It was a tough decision for him. And, you know, I feel like people don't realize that moving to a big club, as amazing as that sounds, also comes with a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, and the fact that you don't know if your chances are as good at becoming a senior footballer, right? If he stayed at West Brom, there's a chance he's already in the first team, but he wanted to go to Arsenal. He says when Arsenal calls, you answer. And he did just that. Arsenal believed in Lino Sousa immediately, though. They let Joel Lopez go, for those of you who remember Joel Lopez, who was having a fantastic season for the under-23s. They let him go back to Spain that summer, so there was room for this 17-year-old to start every single week with the under-23s. By September, Sousa had made an incredible mark. Just 9 months into his time at Arsenal, and he was already traveling with the first team squad for a Europa League match against Zurich, and a week later making the bench in the Premier League against Brentford. The reason Sousa is so sought after and why Arteta and the rest of the Arsenal staff think he is such a talent is because by trade, he's a left back, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. At West Brom, it was a very traditional role. He used his immense pace and power to bomb down the wings, swinging in crosses, keeping the width on the pitch, his ankles on the touchline. You know how it is. The traditional fullback. He goes up and down. He makes tackles. He swings crosses in. That's what it takes. However, Sousa was so good at this, and he has incredible speed and his crossing ability. This is why he progressed so far in his age group. But scouts and Arteta specifically saw something a little bit different in Sousa's abilities that caught their eye to what he could bring to Arsenal. And that was his ability to hold the ball in tight spaces, shift his body to prevent passing bias, and operate in those more central areas, and to carry the ball through multiple phases, being a bit of a Swiss Army knife, someone who can step into the midfield, who doesn't need to be wide, but can also hold the width and throw crosses in when needed. The inverted left back, of course, is what I'm talking about. And so immediately upon joining Arsenal, Lino Sousa began his training in the Arteta school of inverted fullbacks. Kevin Betsy, who was the coach at the time, spoke about the important traits that an inverted fullback needs to learn at their age and what they do in training. He said, quote, "If we don't put him in situations where he's challenged and under consistent pressure, then he would just become a very traditional functional fullback. That's not the type of fullback that this club is used to." Sousa has spoke quite a bit about the training as well. He says he has to see the same pictures in training in order to put it onto the pitch, put himself in those spaces, put himself in those tough situations, focus on his body shape, his angles, and scanning the pitch. He's used to receiving it with his heels on the end line, right? Now he's got to be used to receiving it with the potential of players attacking him from multiple different angles versus what usually was a face-on situation. However, this has been no problem for Lino. He is very comfortable on the ball. He has great composure. All of that goes along with his pace and power that I spoke about, making him somebody who is very hard to keep track of in the midfield. He has great technique, trapping the ball in tight spaces, spinning away, and creating his own passing angles. As mentioned earlier, Sousa has a knack for crossing, something that natural fullbacks develop at a young age. And that ability has translated into the new actions that he has to create in the half space. Similar to Roziak, he has the bend, he has the pace, the placement on his cross to put it in the exact danger areas that they need to be in order for goal opportunities to be created. Sousa also has incredible composure defensively. He never loses his head in defensive duels or when the pressure mounts in deep areas. He's 6 feet tall. Most inverted fullbacks that you see, we're talking Alexander Zinchenko, Rico Lewis. These guys are smaller players who, you know, are fullbacks, but really maybe potentially midfielders by trade. And that's why the inverted fullback role is so good for them. Sousa, however, looks like a center back when he's back there. He can shift into that space as well and defend as well as anybody can. But to have that kind of frame in midfield, to have that running power in midfield, that's a whole nother beast. And defensively, wingers can't just work past him. He's pacey. He's got the strength to bully them off the ball. And as I said, with shifting his body, he knows how to protect the ball in key areas and prevent players from getting around him. Intelligence does not begin to describe Lino Sousa. It goes beyond learning a completely new position at just 17 years old, when he spent his entire life playing a different role. But it's also the way he acts on the pitch. His actions are quick and decisive. He doesn't hold on to the ball too long. His first thought when he receives the ball is to get his head up and find a player in front of him. Whether that's a first-time pass, a two-touch pass, whatever it is, that's his first thought. Then to see where he is on the pitch, see if he can advance the ball himself, see if he can carry into space and help move his team up the pitch. And then third, to recycle, find his role on the pitch and repeat. This is incredibly important. As an inverted fullback, you are often put in the most dangerous areas, but also the areas where you can make the most happen. You are that extra man in midfield, and therefore you have to be not just technically sound, but you have to be creative. You have to know your passing angles. And that is something that Sousa has. He has the ability to be Zinchenko with more PNP and overlapping abilities. He's someone who can tandem with Jurrien Timber when he's back in a fascinating way. Considering Sousa has the defensive acumen and size to keep Arsenal tall and strong the way Arteta likes his back line, but also step into midfield, can create a dynamic that we haven't seen often with Arsenal, where you have both fullbacks inverting at times and the opportunity to switch back and forth. I wouldn't be shocked if Lino Sousa were to get a first-team debut by the end of this season, or potentially a six-month loan in January to help him adapt to senior football. I would really expect some sort of decision on his future to be made this summer, whether that's a full-year loan to the championship. I think the Bundesliga could be a great opportunity, or to be integrated in the first team, as Arsenal begin to phase out either Zinchenko or Tomiyasu. Lino Sousa is just an incredible talent and a well-scouted player who joined Haaland, obviously, after being a scholar and all of those things. But to still be at Haaland at 16 and potentially playing for the Arsenal first team in the next 12 months is massive news. Lino Sousa is a one-in-a-million player, a player you'd pay £20 million for any given window to bring in a Swiss Army knife inverted fullback who can also defend. And I'm very excited to see when he gets his opportunity because he has all of the things that Arteta looks for in any kind of defender, not just a fullback. And now to our lone players, and I think this might be the most goals and assists that we've had in any given 1 week since we started this podcast. Starting with Charlie Patino, who actually had a bit of a tumultuous week, but capped off by a brilliant moment. Not in the starting 11 for his second and third matches in a row, playing just 19 minutes in the 3-1 loss to Leeds, and not getting on the ball much, although he did have one key pass and 11 of 12 passing. But then he came on in the 72nd minute against Huddersfield Town and salvaged a point for Swansea, not just by scoring a goal to make it 1-1, scoring the equalizer in stoppage time, but by dictating play, by being the Charlie Patino that he has been for Swansea prior to that red card and prior to being left out of the 11, and showing whoever the next manager is, considering Michael Duff was fired, why he needs to be in the starting 11 every week and why he's probably one of the best five players in the championship. He was 21 of 25 passing, two shots, one goal, four key passes in 18 minutes. He was successful on two of his three crosses. On the goal, it was just brilliant. He won the ball back in midfield and continued to chase it after he had a player in front of him dribbling. He received the pass back from that player on the outside of the box, took one touch into his path so he could get a good strike on it, and slotted it into the corner at the far post, tying it up for Swansea and getting a huge point for them as they'd been on a bad run of form. And then just seconds later, on the final kick of the game off of a corner kick, Patino put an absolutely perfect ball in from a corner. Free header for his teammate who's inside the six-yard box, and he just skies it over the bar. Unlucky for Patino not to get another assist, but he has just been incredible. And I feel like we've talked about the fact that when he's in midfield for a possession-based team, his range of passing is absurd. Everything flows through him. He dictates the pace, whether it's to be direct or whether it's to recycle play and, you know, keep possession for a small period. But the goal and assist numbers and the fact that they are staggeringly low for how many incredible balls he's played, like, he's got an incredible tally going, and it could be even higher if he was in a better squad. Charlie Patino, I'm excited for the new manager to come in. It looks like it's going to be Brendan Rodgers' old assistant, who will hopefully play a similarly attacking style of football that Rodgers likes. And in that case, Charlie Patino will have an excellent second half of the season, as long as we can avoid a Mick McCarthy situation. And Brooke Norton-Cuffey. I mean, Brooke Norton-Cuffey is now playing his best senior football over an extended period of time, including that first loan to Lincoln City. This is the Brooke Norton-Cuffey that I expected to see last year for the entirety of it. And for this year, I think, you know, maturity comes into play. And as he ages and as he gets the experience, this is why you use the loan system. He played the full 90 against Ipswich in a 3-1 loss. He was 24 of 32 passing, one shot on target. He, you know, Millwall spent much of this match chasing the game. They were 3-0 down inside 40 minutes. But, you know, Norton-Cuffey kept attacking. And he kept trying to make things happen when the squad was trying to come back. He had a really nice cut in and shot with his weak foot, trying to beat the keeper at the near post, trying to get something going for Millwall. He didn't get on the ball quite enough in the second half as they were chasing that game. But the next match is really where Norton-Cuffey continued his great form. Played the full 90 minutes in a 1-1 draw with Sunderland, 22 of 32 passing, one assist. He was 4 of 4 on successful dribbles. 3 of 4 tackles won, 10 of 13 ground duels won, and 5 aerial duels won. He was an absolute menace all over the pitch, running up and down that sideline, getting the ball in space, continuing to push forward. And this is the type of crossing that I have been preaching about with Brooke Norton-Cuffey since before his first loan, since I started this account. His ability to cross from an early crossing position, so just above where the 18-yard box starts and to put in the right amount of bend and whip and pick out a player. And that is exactly what he did on this assist. I feel vindicated. He did this at the youth level regularly, every match, every time he went down the wing. These are the types of crosses that he was special at. Why I thought he would be such a great player in Arsenal's first team, because that area is a place we like to deliver balls in from and pick players out from. And Brook Norton-Cuffey has that talent, and he showed it right here. It was an absolutely spectacular performance from him, although only a 1-1 draw with Sunderland, who are one of the better teams in the championship. And the only, you know, little downside, and I don't know this is a downside as much because it comes with a positive, but since Norton-Cuffey has been playing a little bit further forward at times, I think he's struggling a bit with his recovery position, but that speed that he has gets him back into the defensive areas and winning balls back as well as anybody. We've spoken a lot about Arthur Okonkwo, and this is some grim news. He picked up a very unfortunate injury in the 2-2 draw with Harrogate Town. He had to come off at halftime. He got injured trying to claim possession on a high claim, got punched in the jaw kind of, and he needed treatment twice. They thought he was concussed potentially. He was dazed at halftime in the locker room, so they pulled him. They're hoping to find out more about the jaw injury soon. It doesn't appear it was a concussion, but he has now missed two matches, plus that second half of the Harrogate Town match. Hopefully to get Okonkwo back soon. I know Wrexham fans were already talking about potentially bringing him in permanently in the summer. But Tyrese Jones is back on the pitch, and in two matches, subbing on late, he has scored two goals. First, he comes on and wins it for Derby County, scoring on his first touch. A cross comes in and a beautiful one-time finish to give Derby County the 3 points. And then he scores again in the what used to be called the Papa John's Trophy. Now it's, I think, the Bristol Motors Trophy. Tyrese Jones comes on in the 75th minute. He scores in the 88th, receives the ball just outside the box, taking one touch, composing himself, and finishing low and hard inside the near post. These are the types of finishes that Tyrese Jones is just fantastic at. He is the most technical nine coming out of Hale End in maybe forever. And it's just been the fitness. The fitness is so unfortunate. He just hasn't, his muscles are made of jello. They just will not stay intact. They're just, it's been very unfortunate for Tyrese, but this is the player we know he is. Every time he's healthy, he's banging goals, he's getting assists, he's creating opportunities, he's being the number nine that we hoped he would be for Arsenal. And all I can say is I'm rooting for him. Obviously at this point, his Arsenal career is dead, but if he can find some form here at Derby, maybe help them get promoted, maybe go to them in the championship next year and restart his career and become a player, all the power to him. And now Mika Bierith. I mean, again, as I said at the top of this section, we are scoring goals at an amazing rate for our lone players. He started and played 86 minutes against Dundee, scoring a goal in this 3-3 draw. His finish in the opening minutes of this match was absolutely absurd. It was a half volley, first time screamer off the inside of a near post from the edge of the box. I mean, his catalog of goals, I talk about it every week because every week it's a different type of goal. It's astonishing. There isn't a type of goal that not only can he not score, but he doesn't feel comfortable with trying to take that opportunity. And they're not wasteful. There aren't many moments where Mika Bierith is taking a shot that is would be an outrageous goal, and it's going way over the bar. They're on target. They're challenging the keeper. They're opportunities that Motherwell needs because they struggle so much to create. He's a match winner, create something out of nothing, center forward. And this was just a fantastic goal in a 3-3 draw. He was also 21 of 27 passing. In this match, he got to play a little bit more off of a central striker in a position where he can get on the ball more often. And as great of a finisher as Mika Bierith is, it's important not to limit him and to force him to play as a lone man up top. He needs to get on the ball. That's where he can be creative. Then he makes a second run in, and that's where he scores goals. And then he played the full 90 in the 3-0 loss to Ross County. Motherwell, again, just really struggled in this match. They're struggling to create. They're struggling to hold possession. He did have two shots, one on target, 13 of 19 passing. That one shot on target was actually not a big chance missed. He did have a big chance missed on a more impressive opportunity. Two of two successful dribbles in this match. The big chance miss came on a backheel volley, coming across the face of goal, trying to get his boot to it. Unlucky not to get it on target. The reason that's a big chance miss is because it's a shot from inside the 6-yard box. But as you'll be seeing here, if you're watching on YouTube, this was no easy chance to score. But he also had a shot cleared off the line, trying to curl one in with his left foot. It's just insane how many different ways he's trying to score and how many different ways he's successful. I mean, he had no angle here. He had no space. And he just gets a shot off with his left foot, trying to curl it into the far post. And unluckily for him, there's a player standing there who clears it off the line. Omar Rekik is now playing 90 minutes multiple times a week. Played the full 90 in a 3-0 win over Fleetwood Town, this time at right center back, and a very comfortable performance for him. 66 of 71 passing, completed 3 passes into the final third, and won 4 of his 7 duels. However, playing in such a deep line is my new theory on why things aren't going so well for an athletic player like Omar Rekik. I think he's more accustomed to a high line because he's more accustomed to being an on-the-ball defender, and he has good recovery speed. He's happy to kind of play in that offside trap and chase the ball down as it goes over his head. But when players are dribbling at him, I don't think he's at his best. He often panics and makes bad decisions. And then in the second match this week, in a 1-0 win over York City, Omar Rekik got his first senior goal contribution, assisting that winning goal. It was a headed clearance that just bounded over the defense into Humphrey's path, who slotted it home. Rekik was excellent again, calm in this game, 78 of 88 passing. Keto Taylor-Hart and Alex Kirk continue not to feature for Bromley. Taylor Hart was on the bench yet again, but there's no sign of Kirk. Salah Eddine Ouladam Hand is still not with the squad. I'm guessing it's another injury. Nathan Butler Oyedehi, just not getting minutes. Played 2 minutes in the Charlton Athletic 2-1 loss. He's not getting the opportunity at Cheltenham. This has been a really unfortunate back-to-back loan spells for Nathan. I would assume he's going to leave the club in the summer. Catalan Serjan played 17 minutes in a 0-0 draw with Botasani. This loan spell also not going how we wanted. It's so funny. He started hot, assisting multiple goals in his first few matches, starting, playing nearly full matches, and now he can't find his way into meaningful minutes on the pitch. Mauro Bandiera has returned to the Colchester squad, making the bench, but did not feature against Doncaster in a 3-1 loss or against West Ham under-21s in the Bristol Motors Trophy. Billy Vigar on the bench for a 2-1 to Taunton Town that was actually abandoned at halftime due to adverse fog. And then Henry Jeffcott. Finally, Derby under-21s were back in action. Jeffcott played the full 90 in a 5-1 win. That's all we've got for our lone players. Hope you enjoyed the Lino Sousa profile. Hopefully, we're going to see him play sooner rather than later. But that's all we've got. Please like, comment, subscribe on YouTube if you're watching here. If you're listening on where you get your Spotify's, come to YouTube. We've got highlights to go along with everything that I'm talking about. You can watch and listen at the same time. Put it on in the background. Hit that subscribe button. Give me a rating on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you're watching. Find me on Twitter at Hail End Productions. On TikTok, we're doing some more short form content now as well. You can find me there, Hail End Prods. Wherever you get all of your content, you can find our content there. Thank you again for listening, and we'll be back next week.